We are in Mark 4:35. So as we've been going through Mark, it's we saw early on the introduction of the ministry with John, and but it just gets really right into Jesus' ministry with really where how Mark goes, and from the very beginning it's kind of establishing this ministry as far as in Mark's presentation. So it's his authority, his power over, he encounters a demon and disease and then leprosy and paralytic, and has the encounter with the tax collector and has issues with kind of the old style of religion and the Sabbath and the guy that's in the synagogue gets hands deformed and more with demons, and then the call of the disciples, and then some about kind of this spiritual ministry. Just trying to find the. But then we, with that, following that, then was the parables. The teaching on the parables, and then. Verse 35 says, on that day, if he's looking back, and I lost my reference, but it would go back into chapter 3, really, before the verse 7, a little hard to know exactly the timing, but at least in verse 22 of chapter 3, it says the scribes came down from Jerusalem and were sent. So we're at least at that time period. In verse 13, it says he went up on the mountain and summoned those whom he himself wanted, and they came to him. And then verse 20, he came home and the crowd gathered. So it kind of be in that period, and he came home. Following these, the appointing of the 12, if that's, where he's going back. So this is a very exact reference. Not so sure why it would be important to designate it that day, other than if that's the case, he's showing this is a really full day. These crowds have gathered around. He's taught in this way through the parables, and it says, on that day when evening came, he said to them, let us go over to the other side. Well, so we're talking about on the side of the sea here. So leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. So in this particular place section, it doesn't so much state what the purpose of going to the other side is. And sometimes in these situations, it's to get away from the crowds. And we'd assume that's here. But even in getting away from the crowds, some had access to boats. And so even there, it's not in some isolation. There's others that, are going along. But so they're going across. And one thing about the Sea of Galilee, they say, is that the storms can come up very quickly, and because of its the below sea level and the at the level it is, not below sea level, I guess this is below sea level here, that the you kind of have tunnel effects, and the winds can be extremely strong, come up very quickly. So here it says, and there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was almost filling up. Well, I not been on lots of boats, and the boats I've been on have had motors, and they were just down a lake. I remember once in high school, we were on some trip with some school outing. I can't remember what the group was, but we were on a boat, and it started raining, and and it kind of had a covering at the front, and everybody wanted to get up and nap, which puts the nose down, which hits more of the wind, and the guy needed his back, but nobody wanted to get back because you're going to get, you know, the wind's on you. But, you know, so here it's raining, but the waves are breaking such on the boat that the water's coming into the boat. So while it doesn't state here, I'm assuming that some people have some buckets and getting water out of the boat, but the water is coming in at such a rate that, and many of these are experienced fishermen, that they have become concerned about drowning. And so it's a pretty serious situation. Yeah, when you look around, you see a boat filling up with water, you kind of, you might become concerned. And that's their situation. It's saying it, you know, it was already filling up. So it's kind of like it's coming very quickly. And, you know, it doesn't give it in contrast, but it almost could. Jesus himself was in the stern asleep on the cushion. Well, it doesn't really tell us what these guys were doing at this point. It says there arose this great wind and the waves were breaking and the boat's filling up. And Jesus is asleep. Well, I mean, it doesn't tell us what's going on. Like I said, I can imagine they're, you know, trying to figure out ways to get the water out of the boat. And I would assume they had some kind of buckets on a boat like that, because I'm sure water got in boats, but not at this rate. And so they finally, you know, somebody says, hey, we better wake Jesus up, which we could speculate that it's Peter. But that's just speculation. But the other encounters, Peter tends to be the one that's a little more confrontational, you know, the one that's speaking out. And so they decide they need to wake him up. And they say, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And, you know, it's a very interesting question in many fronts. I mean, one is they've come to a conclusion, not that, you know, we need more hands getting this water out, or we need another bucket, or we need to rebalance, you know, we need the people, kind of like that boat I was talking about, where we need people at the back to get the stern up. We're perishing. And then the other one is because Jesus is asleep, he just doesn't care. You know, these are the fun things to think about, because we really are limited in what we know. It makes me think, just by the way the question is that they probably, it would seem, view Jesus in a way that suggests that he's not going to perish. They don't say, you know, wake up, you're going to perish, or we're all perishing, you better, you know, we better get out and swim. But you kind of wonder, I mean, you know, are you not concerned that we're perishing? I just wonder if they're including him in it. Maybe they are. But I just wonder if it's more of like, we know you're capable of getting out of this thing, because we've seen some of the miracles you do, but you're not doing anything to help us. But regardless of where they're seeing Jesus at this moment, they're clearly seeing it as he doesn't care about them. That there's probably a thought that he has the ability to do something, and he just doesn't really care. You know, you could get into these things which we don't know the answers to. But why does faith escape them at that point? And then once we deal with that, then we could say, why does faith escape us at certain points? You know, would we ever be in a situation where we might And whether we actually utter the words or not, that's basically what we're saying is, Jesus, don't you care that we're perishing? So what do you think? Any thoughts?
Certainly it's easy to get fixated on what is tangible, even though, you know, parts of us know that the spiritual is more real than our physical world. But it's easy to let, you know, our present now circumstances just take us under.
Mm-hmm. If you were just going to draw kind of an element, you'd say he's comfortable in the midst of trouble. Jesus wasn't. You know, he was able to sleep. He was able to be on mission. He probably knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we give him such human character, you know, emotions and stuff, that he would have not. It just doesn't bother him.
But how do you mean, you know, I mean, see, it's, you know, that's the, I think the challenge is we read this and it's really easy to just, the disciples just like idiots. They just saw this. They just saw that. Idiots, you know. And yet, we attribute things to God. You know, we say, I mean, we may, you know, may have not experienced the miracles in the sense that they experienced them, but we've had these things we said, we think, you know, we say God interacted, and we've got scripture and stuff, and yet, you know, we end up in the same place. Faith is not a, God would say it, faith is not a like a quality that, it's, you know, it's not a resource that you can just pull out. Mm-hmm. You know, like anything, you know, oh, I need a flashlight? Yeah, pull out of your backpack. I got a flashlight. Faith is almost like, you know, if anything, it'd be like the flashlights in our closets. You know, it's like, when was the last time I used that? Oh, yeah, last year. So, you know, you turn it on, the batteries are dead. I mean, you know, unfortunately, you know, I mean, for us, it's almost a, you know, you know, just the way we do it. So here they are.
Well, and carrying on with that kind of analogy, I think faith is more like a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if we don't exercise, then we get sort of flabby and weak. Mm-hmm. And when we need strength, we don't have it.
Well, I just came across some notes. I can't remember what class it was from, but it said that you... remember the essence of God. You remember the absolute authoritative word of God.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember your history of God. And I just thought that was such a cool way to put it. Just remember your history.
Yeah. And see, but why is it such a challenge? You know what I mean? Which we're not going to answer that question. But that's where we're at here.
If it wasn't, we wouldn't need him.
So true. Much. And it wouldn't be faith in part. But crisis situations come, and you know, the interesting thing is that you may find that in a crisis situation, it's you have more faith than you would have expected, but in another situation you don't. I mean, it's always a challenge. But here, you know, here they're saying, you know, don't you care, you know, that we're perishing? Do you not care? And verse 39, and he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, hush, be still.
And the other thing that just came to me is all the verses that he gives us on how to be careful with our words, how important our words are. And here's an example, whether they meant it or not, generations after generations get to think this about them. Or
true.
So, now another way where he can say, I teach you this, you go back to read this now.
Very good.
If
and it says the wind died down and it became perfectly calm. Now one of my fun things would be like, you know, like to see the videotape of this. I been to some of these water parks or something, and where they have those wave pools now. Mm-hmm. And when it stops, you know, the waves continue, and but it doesn't take long because there's no movement. It doesn't take. It's amazingly how quickly it stops, but it still moves. I wonder, like this, what was this like? Was it the wind stopped and the sea gradually slowed down, and it was, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, and it's, you know, it all got calm? I mean, that would, if the wind just stopped blowing, that's what would happen. It would gradually calm down. Or with this, was there something additional in that it just became still? I don't know. I mean, it's not that one. I mean, I guess on the one hand, one is a miracle that the wind stopped instantly. The other one is a miracle that the wind stopped instantly and that everything got calm instantly. It doesn't make one a lesser miracle by any means. It's just, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I kind of imagine for some reason that it just got really quiet in a hurry. But that's not necessarily true. I mean, you know, if you're somewhere in the winds, which, I mean, nobody's encountered that, where the wind just stopped. Yeah. It, you know, it's going to be kind of like that wave pool. Things are going to calm fairly quickly. But it's obviously you got a lot of momentum, because you're not talking about a pool. You're talking about a sea, and you got a lot of water volume. So it's going to take it a while to calm down.
Like before last, it was freakish like that, though. I mean, there were gusts and gales of wind. Nothing. I mean, should we be worried?
Yeah. Now, if you've been around a tornado, you get that.
But, I mean, it was just such, like,
yeah.
Because
you know, you hear about that calm before it coming. And I remember in college, there was this, a tornado hit Lubbock. And I was going to school, you know, close to Amarillo. And so that's 100 miles away. And it was, you know, it was a big tornado. And I think it was the next night, there were all these storms around. I remember being outside. I was, some people were walking around, and it was just that like eerie, you know what I mean? Everything's a strange, but it was just calm. All this racket's going on, but it was just calm. You're like, okay, we fixing to get sucked out of here or what? but anyway, so it just, either way, the wind stops immediately, and quickly, if not immediately, it's calm. And it is interesting here, because it doesn't say, and it became calm. Perfectly calm. I mean, you know, I envision this being like one of these glass seas. Probably never occurs on this particular sea.
Again, God making sure they knew. It wasn't by chance. It wasn't just this happened. But there's no doubt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so Jesus says to them in verse 40, it's recorded here, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? Why are you afraid?" Now, this is that use of afraid in the sense of, you know, being scared, not being reverential. Why are you afraid? Why are you scared? Why are you fearful? Well, because the wind's blowing and we could drown. And I've been on this sea a lot and I've never seen it this bad. I mean, can answer that all kinds of things, but yet it's back to those, you know, the descriptions you were given. But don't you know who I am? Don't you believe this? Don't have you seen some of this? You know, so his deal is, do you still have no faith? So he puts it in terms of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a faith issue. And, you know, you think about the things that they've just, you know, experienced. You know, if it's on one day, then it's mainly been teaching. But they also know they're very special because Jesus is treating them differently than everybody. But in recent days or weeks, they've seen him heal people. They've seen the confrontations. They've seen, you know, just amazing things. Yeah, just amazing things. And yet, that was all somebody else. And now it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there becomes an issue of faith. Even when we read the Bible, we believe it, but that's somebody else. This is me. You know, there's a, not that it's applicable in this sense of having really anything to do with the story, other than the sense of that's them and this is me. The old adage about, you know what minor surgery is. It's something that somebody else is having. And, you know, and that's kind of the thing here, you know. Yeah, those all, yeah, I saw all those miracles and I believe all that, but that was them. This is now. And what are you going to do? And just verse 41 is just, you know, it's just phenomenal. They became very much afraid. Now, this is an interesting, the fear here is totally different. It just is not the same kind of afraid. Before, they were afraid about losing their life. They were afraid that the storms were going to sweep them over into the water, or that the water was going to fill up the boat. They were going to drown. They were fearful that they would lose their life. Now, I don't think this is in the sense of reverence either, but the fear has shifted. You know, it's still a fear, but it comes from a different type of emotion, a different angle. They became very much afraid and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" I mean, here they are. I mean, what would be the point of waking up Jesus unless you just didn't want to die alone or thought he ought to be aware that he was going to die in a minute? I mean, when they woke up Jesus, didn't they do that? And then the whole question formed in such a way that they thought he had the ability to do something about it. I mean, it's not like they don't think Jesus is somebody unique, somebody special. What exactly did they think he was? I don't know. Did they think he was the Messiah at this point, and the Messiah was a political deliverer, and that he was empowered by God to do certain things so he could heal people? It was kind of like, you know, he's an instrument of God, that through him God acted and he could heal people. He was a great teacher. He had the authority over demons. But, I mean, there was, you know, so they had all this, but this is on a different scale. I mean, this isn't a disease. It isn't in somebody else. This is nature, if you would. And it was directly impacting their life. It's the very elements that they've been a part of as fishermen, but yet perhaps on a scale they hadn't even seen themselves. And Jesus just simply said, "Hush." I mean, and you know, when they look at that, they go, "Who is this guy?" You know, I mean, they're going, "We really don't know who he is. We think he's the Messiah. We think he's God's servant. We think he's has authority over, you know, great authority. We think he's, you know, this incredible teacher. We think he's worth following. Wow, we don't even know who he is." I don't know. You know, I don't think you can have that experience with another person in the sense that they had it. I don't think we're ever going to have that experience. Yeah, I think you can have that experience with God. I think you can have the same experience they had. It's just that you're not doing it physically. Just like you can be a disciple, but you can't be a disciple like they were, because we're not following Jesus. Not in that literal, earthly, walking around following him. Are there those times in our Christian walk that maybe we've come to that point of going, "Whoa, who is this?" Where the insight, the power of God, the ability of God, the care of God, whatever aspect that's under, you know, being talked about or being revealed at that moment, where it's just so much more overwhelming than what you had ever thought it could be. And, you know, and that's where they're at this point. They're just, Jesus going, ye of little faith, and then they're going, wow, this is beyond. There's a, you know, and this gets into, and there's another other accounts that have it a little differently, or brings in some little thing where they fall down and worship. And it gets into that aspect of, you know, just the holiness, this uniqueness of God. And in this, you know, there's a story, Sproul tells this story in his book on holiness when he's talking about this, that there was, and this would be going back, you know, quite some time, and you know, it was one of these pro-am golf tournaments, and so, you know, this is way back. Jack Nicholson's a, you know, great golfer, and this professional golfer, though not on the caliber of like a Jack Nicholson as far as fame, but a, you know, professional golfer, is teamed up with Jack Nicholson, and I think it was Gerald Ford and Billy Graham, and that was the foursome. Well, after the, you know, round, this golfer is in the clubhouse and he's throwing stuff around, and he's going, you know, somebody asked him, you know, how things go, and he's throwing stuff around, and he's going, he said, I don't have to put up with that Billy Graham cramming religion down my throat. And you know, after he calmed down a little bit, the guy said, he really was preaching to you? And he says, no, he didn't say a word. I just had a bad round, you know. But anyway, Sproul's deal is that this, you know, it's like this being in the presence of holiness. Not so much trying to say that Billy Graham was somebody that was uniquely holy, but the perspective, you know, this guy's coming to it, he's seeing Billy Graham that way, and you know, you come to it, and that being in the presence of holiness has a way of undoing you. And these disciples, they're seeing that at this point. Who is this guy? And you start to come undone. I mean, they saw Jesus as what at this point? You know, clearly a leader, a great teacher.
One with authority.
The one with authority. Perhaps they said he's the Messiah already. They saw Messiah perhaps, you know, somewhat as the political king. But still, let's say they even saw him as this is the future king. Perhaps they saw deity to some level. You know, maybe they're already seeing some of that. But all of a sudden, it's the realization. This is the Son of God. This is deity. This is God. And you know, and their whole everything is different at that point. Trying to see if there's a. Okay, now this is not the same setting. In Matthew, this is when Peter was walking, or when Jesus is walking on the water, and then Peter gets out. and it says, you know, but seeing the wind, he became afraid and began to sink and cried out to Jesus. And immediately Jesus stuck out his hand and goes, you have little faith. When they got into the boat, the wind stopped. And those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, you are certainly God's son. See, there's that type of a setting when they're going, who are you? I mean, there's this recognition going on. They're trying to process this, and they see this as, you know, this is this insight of that this is different, and it impacts people. And you know, I mean, salvation is that way for a lot of people. They've been around church, they've heard of God, they've kind of been in those circles, and all of a sudden something happens that they see something they hadn't seen. That something occurs in a way that hadn't occurred, and all of a sudden it's different. Everything's different. What do you have? Thoughts or questions or insights?
Well, what do you think
insights
the people in the other boats were thinking?
Great. See, and that's...
They're gone. So the boat, so the...
Yeah. You know, I mean, those are just phenomenal, great observation.
Jesus was already in a boat and there were other boats with him.
And did they sink? Were they already sunk? Did any of them sink before that? Were they yelling? Were they yelling at the boat that Jesus... What do you mean he's asleep? Oh, we're not waking him up. You better wake him up.
It's kind of like that mother asleep is hearing everything go on anyway.
Yeah.
All right, I'm up.
And, you know, were they just over there bailing water and all of a sudden things got calm and then we get on the other side, they go, I've never seen wind go away like that. And just, have you ever seen anything like that? Peter's going, Jesus told. What? Jesus said, stop, and it stopped. Oh, you got to be kidding. That's why it stopped that way. Well, I've never seen it do that before. I don't know. Those are just phenomenal. I mean, wouldn't you love to know that kind of stuff? We have all these things of deep theology we'd like to know. But there's all these situations. Like the one that I'd really like to know is at the crucifixion the night before when Peter pulls out his sword and cuts off the guy's ear. And I thought the Passion, the movie about on the Passion, I thought they handled that in a good way that was plausible in that, like, because, you know, one of the things is, well, you know, if you think of this group, 50 people walk up here and they confront Jesus and Peter pulls out his sword and cuts off the guy's ear and everybody sees it. And they're all just sitting there going, this guy's bleeding. And Jesus goes, shoot, here, back on. I mean, wouldn't that impact a few people's lives? Well, in the Passion, there's all this confusion with people running and stuff. And really, it's like one or two people see this. Nobody really sees this. So that seems plausible in terms of, wouldn't this impact a whole bunch of people's lives? But nevertheless, this guy's ears cut off. I want to know what he did when he went home. Mm-hmm. He walks in. His wife goes, what's all the blood? And he says, you wouldn't believe it if I told you. Mm-hmm. What? Well, this guy cut my ear off. He cut it right off. It was on the ground. And this Jesus guy, he picked it up and stuck it back on. I mean, what did that guy do? I mean, maybe everybody else doesn't believe, but what about that? But we don't know a thing about it. And I guess that movie, The Robe, which I haven't seen in so long, I don't even remember what it is anymore. But isn't there a movie called The Robe? And anyway, it's about that. It's an Easter time show about this robe that I guess that belonged to Jesus and it getting passed around in this faith issue or something. It's a really old movie, but there's so many things that you wonder about. But that's great, yeah. What were those people in the boats thinking, and what did they think afterwards, and what happened?
Yeah, and yet there's, been studying some missionaries for something I'm doing in ladies' class, and we studied Gladys Allward this last week and all, but it's just, you know, she decides that this is what God wants her to do, and it's one obstacle after another, and it's just met. Just met in the most phenomenal ways, and you're like, I wonder how much of that happens in our life and we just miss it because...
I don't know. You know, one of the things, Dallas Seminary has... The history of Dallas Seminary in the early days, there are a lot of these... situational things where provision is brought in such a way, how do you discount it? Mm-hmm. And... then Dallas got to a point when Walford became Chafer's assistant. He convinced Chafer that it was appropriate to make your needs known. And so they started sharing needs in terms of prayer and various things. And then, you know, the seminary got more financially stable, I guess would be our terms, would be more solvent. And there's a mixture there. You don't hear the great stories anymore. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, prior to Walford really getting in a lot of that stuff, and even later, you know, is that most of the faculty was, the faculty was way behind in salaries. You know, you didn't get paid. You got paid occasionally. But, you know, so I mean, I don't know that one way's right and one way's wrong per se, but I do know that sometimes we miss, you know, when we are have fair affluence and stuff, sometimes we miss those clear provisions. Sometimes we miss them because we chalk them up to other things and don't want to take a risk of, oh, maybe that was. But there, when Dallas Seminary first got started, when Chafer was came up with this idea of starting the seminary, he had Chafer was a musician for an evangelist, and the evangelist didn't show up. Or I don't think he was an evangelist, maybe he was a teacher, you know, like a revival type thing. But maybe it was not really so much an evangelist, but it's a Bible prophecy or a Bible conference type thing. Anyway, the guy didn't show up sometimes, so Chafer started teaching, you know, preaching. And that's where he kind of got it. So anyway, he got this burden about this, start having this seminary, this evangelical seminary. And he found a theologian, and he found a Greek, you know, a language guy, this guy that could do Greek and Hebrew. And so that's, they're going to start it. He's more the administrator. And the theologian dies. And he's, you know, like, what are we, and he was in Europe at the time, I think, and it was that prayer that morning, you know, basically, I need a sign, you know, I don't remember the exact prayer, but I've heard the story, but, you know, basically, I need confirmation, this is what I'm supposed to do, because things aren't going well, and gets a phone call from this theologian's wife, would he like the library, guy's library, and, when you know, it was kind of fun, because you could, when I was in the seminary, you know, you could find some of these books. And he'd come across some of these books from Griffith Thomas, yeah. and his daughter or granddaughter, who would have been, was an elderly lady, but she's around campus. This Griffith Thomas, but anyway, I mean, you have these things that they really, you know, these points that impact and change, and then sometimes you don't have the clear confirmation that something happened. Mm-hmm. And I think I've shared it various times. This time after Eric was born, when Robin started having these headaches, just really severe headaches that just started one night and in the middle of the night. And that was the two things that were a big concern was, one is that they just, it woke her up out of her sleep at night, and that it followed a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And those were two indicators of brain tumor. And, you know, the tumor's just growing faster in pregnancy. And, you know, I guess it would have probably been a CAT scan or something. And, you know, back then, they weren't all that, you just didn't get them that quickly. And it was going to be a week away. And she had a headache every night for a week. And that was started on a Sunday night. And then on that Sunday, she was going to have the CAT scan on Monday. On that Sunday, before the CAT scan, she didn't have one. And then nothing's on the CAT scan. So, now, here you are as a, you know, what do? You just say, oh, we a bunch of worry about nothing. There was nothing there. Or was she healed? Now, I mean, objectively, I cannot tell you. I don't know. But I don't dismiss that easily. I don't just go, oh, there wasn't any. Eh. You know, we just, a bunch of worry about nothing. Mm-hmm. And so I think we, you know, we find ourselves at times in situations like that. Now, there may be times where you have confirmation and then you see the healing. But there may be other times that you're in these situations and you realize, you know, I may have just experienced a miracle.